This episode is brought to you by Button Down, the easiest way to start, send, and grow your email newsletter. Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, a podcast on the Django web framework. I'm Carlton Gibson, joined as ever by Will Vinson. Hello, Will.
Hi, Carlton.
Hello, Will. Today we've got with us Jib Adegunloe, who's a senior software engineer at MongoDB. Hi, Jib. How are you?
Hey. How are you doing? I'm doing great.
I'm marvellous. I'm really excited you've come on. You've got some really exciting news because Mongo just released the preview of a new database backend for MongoDB for Django, right?
Yes. We just did our public preview or beta of our release called the Django MongoDB backend. And it quite literally is what it sounds like, a MongoDB backend for Django.
Okay, well, that sounds super. I'm going to pause us there on talking about that because we're going to nerd out on that a lot. So before we get there, I want to know a little bit about you and, you know, who you are and, you know, how come you get to be building this thing? So, you know, do tell us.
Yeah. So I guess I'd start at, you know, the beginning of my sort of software engineering journey. You know, came into sort of CS as an undergrad and over in 2014. I'd always known I'd like CS, and I was actually really interested in database systems. So a large bulk of my CS education was actually based in SQL databases. So,
right, yeah, standard. Of course, right.
By the time I had graduated, though, the first thing I had done, as I think a lot of computer scientists did at the time, was try and build something of my own. And from trying to build something of my own, it literally in the bike shedding conversation with my ragtag team of friends, they said, "Hey, can we use this thing called MongoDB?" And I was like, "What is it?" And they said, "NoSQL." And I was like, "Absolutely not. I've literally spent But eventually I actually got battered down and I went ahead and I used MongoDB, and I will say I am now like a MongoDB evangelist. I started, like, once I graduated, I started seeing more and more. And so when I got to my first job over at Meta, I started seeing more NoSQL and more pieces like that. And, you know, after kind of doing the gamut around the tech scene, I'd seen an opening for the very thing that, you know, had kind of like been the defining factor of me leaving sort of academia and going into, you know, the business side of things. And there was a position open to be a senior Python dev over at MongoDB. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, you will see me there.
So are you the lucky man doing his dream job? Is that what you're saying?
Basically, you know, I'd hate to romanticize things, but it feels that way for sure.
Yeah. Okay, super.
Can I ask, what were you doing at Facebook Meta? Were you working on databases as well, or no?
No. So at Meta, I did a lot of things. So I first started off at what was formerly known at the time as Oculus Research. It's now Facebook AR VR, or I think Reality Labs. And so I did a lot of the stuff around what's currently seen as like the headsets. And then from there, I had transferred over to what they, you know, termed the blue app, so Facebook proper, where I did quite a bit of machine learning ranking work for the groups, Facebook groups, activity feed. And then from there, I decided to do yet another pivot. And I worked deeply in the traffic organization, specifically dealing with live stream video network protocols. So on across the Facebook or Meta family suite of apps. So Instagram, Facebook, Oculus even. So if it had live, we were very, very much in tune. And like I said, I started out in a life of databases. I found myself in testing infrastructure, then machine learning, and then network protocols. And I was like, let's go back home. Let's go back to
Enough of that already.
Well, I have to ask just a little bit about machine learning, because the it's now public that DjangoCon Europe is happening in April in Dublin, and Carlton's giving a talk. I'm giving a keynote on Django and data science, machine learning. So I'm fascinated to hear from people who've actually done it in a professional capacity, because I'm certainly new to it. I know the web stuff a little bit, but it definitely feels like two separate realms. Like, people who do data science don't really do web, and vice versa. Does that match at all with your experience?
Yeah. I'll say that the one thing that I was introduced to was truly the vastness of computer science by jumping into this machine learning space. When I had done the transition to the team, I had almost openly said, I have no experience yet. And I thought, hey, maybe I would have experience given, you know, I understand scaling large scale databases and things like that. There are definitely some notes that you can pick up, like in terms of like, how do you ingest all this data to feed it into a system that is getting trained, or that is using the information as training data in order to generate informed decisions. So there's definitely an aspect of, if you know a lot of really complex SQL, yeah, that's a great place to get started, right? But I'd say the big thing that I'd learned, like when dealing with applied machine learning, was understanding that, you know, the components you learn about in theories, right? The things about hypotheses building nodes and things such as that, they all kind of map to a larger thing, which is the larger, like what is the genuine machine learning pipeline? What are the machine learning componentry that stack up in this pipeline to actually give me the result? Because even, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the current generative AI things, those similar like sort of principles kind of map, where the AI or the ML, the machine learning, to be specific, machine learning, because generative AI and machine learning are truly like, they have kind of like a fork in the road now. But yeah, the machine learning aspect is, well, what part do I need to apply machine learning functionality to then pass it back off to, you know, like the sort of what I like to call the bread and butter, the meat and potatoes engineering aspects of still parsing, processing, and generating output for the information. And so what that looks like sometimes is, hey, I've got 1.7 billion users, right? And I want to suggest them a group. what can I look at? Well, I know that they've got some, maybe they've got some terms that they use that are public access content, and I can do basically a unsupervised learning where I just kind of match up commonly placed together keywords. The output of that are like tuples of just like 2 to 3 sort of keyword pairs or word pairings. And you actually can't make any sense of that. But you now know that people talk about the word dog and chicken a lot in a post, right? Like, that's the thing that the clustering algorithm told you. It's like dogs and chicken, they're doing something there, right? So now we have that raw new piece of information. And we're like, okay, so we know that we want to look for posts that say dogs and chicken. So we then run it through another algorithm. Well, we then actually run it through some SQL where we're querying for posts or information that are specifically using both the terms dog and chicken simultaneously. And then we feed it through yet another machine learning algorithm to understand, well, okay, of these phrases that we've now isolated, how can we use it to understand or like piece out sentences that actually make sense? And then finally, we piece out the sentences that make sense. And then we feed it back into our usual like ranking algorithm of, well, what's getting the most engagement. We score that on against engagement. And then finally, boom, you've got the output you expected. 2 out of 4 of those stages were machine learning. The other 2 stages were just, again, like us kind of making sense of the machine learning application. And so it's that fine tuning where you build a machine learning machine learning algorithm and applying it and just building a sense of confidence around it in that model. that becomes the crux, at least, of my app, sort of like application of it.
Well, that's one of we often make the point that people talk about, like, internet scale with some things. And if you're working at Facebook with billions of users, that's like, that counts. That's one of the few times it counts.
So,
wow. Well, I don't want to get too off track, but that's all like super interesting. And yeah, we could talk about that the whole time, but we're going to talk about other things. So Carlton, go ahead.
Well, okay, go on then. We'll move on to your Meta. So tell us, not Meta, sorry, your MongoDB. Tell us about what you do at Duongo. You're a senior software engineer there.
Yeah, so like I said, I'm a senior software engineer over at MongoDB. And if I were to describe my role right now is sort of on paper, clear cut. I deal with the, like I work on the database experiences Python team, specifically also known as the drivers Python team or Python drivers team. And what a driver is essentially the library or set of mechanisms that allow a user, a developer namely, to easily connect to their Mongo, their database instance. So in this case, our mainstay, our core language or our core library is PyMongo, which is the Python driver for MongoDB, right? Or the MongoDB driver in Python. Yeah.
And there's a Python developer. That's what I install. I pip install PyMongo when I get going. Right?
Exactly. And so the mainstay thing we focus on and we maintain is that library. There are several subsidiary libraries that we either contribute to heavily or maintain. Some of those being Mongo Engine, which we contribute to, an example of one we maintain ourselves, PyMongo Arrow. And then additionally, there are several others, especially like in the AIML space, like LangChain. We have several contributions there and have, you know, sort of built a relationship and rapport. And then we've also got the web frameworks that we've done our best to integrate with. Namely, you know, things like FastAPI, Flask, and now Jenga. So we try our best as a team to integrate there.
Okay, so that's super. I've got to ask, because hang on, querying Mongo is nothing at all like using the Django ORM. So hang on, what's going on here? How on earth are you integrating with the Django ORM?
Great question. So. One thing I've been saying, and I'm actually eager to get, you know, like, checked on it, has been when I look at Django, when I've viewed Django, I've also always been like, oh, this is a SQL like framework. Like that's what it is. But when you start pulling or piecing apart the layers under the hood, you realize that the way the system works is, yes, there is the Django query set API, like that framework piece. The componentry that allows you to actually issue queries to the database at some point that gets converted to explicit, you know, SQL, like structured query language. And then that gets fed to the database. What you realize is, okay, so there's a set of API calls that actually generate the SQL. So technically, if I just remove the parts that generate the SQL and replace that with MQL, the Mongo query language, it should work, right? And like I said,
hang on, Jim. You just said technically, if I just replace, sure. We'll just do the Mongo query language in there. No problem. Go on, carry on. Sorry.
Of course, I'm definitely being more laissez-faire about my explanation, but to be more specific. So with each, so like, let's say you're doing a standard lookup query of like saying, I want something that starts with, I don't know, the letter Z, right? Forgive my SQL here, but essentially you'd be doing select star from, you know, select whatever from specifying the database table where starts with the letter Z. That's what it would be structured like in SQL, right? So for us, when you do that lookup call, instead of calling, you know, basically like this conversion of as SQL, we have embedded a callback that mirrors that same behavior, where instead of calling what as SQL, we're calling as MQL. And this as MQL is essentially taking that step of where it's seeing the starts with, and it's making our MongoDB analog. We actually do have a predicate that lets you regex match against the beginning of a string. And so that's like the one mini component. But the thing that therein wraps it is we've created our own customized compiler, because what Django is actually speaking to is a SQL compiler. And so we've made our customized SQL compiler with an embedded Mongo query generator that at the same steps where you would call that SQL where clause to generate your SQL, we call that where, and it starts generating what is the syntactic equivalent of a where in MQL. The stuff that's wrapping it, similar to how it's wrapped in Django, where I was talking about select star from, that's kind of standard information that you get from having the model exist. You already know what you're selecting from. That's the model you defined. And you already know what your columns are because you define them in the fields. So if you know you want X fields, we already know that by virtue of having the model. So when it's very easy for us to now construct our MQL equivalent and say, all right, we don't have a select star from, but we do our match statement on starts with, and then we do what's known as a project statement to say, actually, just give me these specific fields that I specify. And so the dollar projected MQL works in a very similar way to select star from, right?
Yeah. Or you've got, and the ORM has the only filter where you can select specific fields. So I guess yes. You implemented that as well.
Yes. And so what this leads to is an almost completely obfuscated layer of MQL that a Django developer does not need to know in order to get work done, right? And we've understood that this has been something that has been a plight for NoSQL developers for some time.
Well, there have been attempts at this, right? I mean, based around the Google App Engine data store originally. I can't remember what it was called, but it kind of worked, but only kind of. Whereas you've gone a step further, right? You've got pretty much all of it works now, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so and it's great you brought up the Google App Engine, because I would say that one, that was a product of almost 10 years ago now.
Yeah, right.
A lot's happened in 10 years. At that time, MongoDB was, I believe, operating on a version less than server version 4. We are currently trailblazing on MongoDB server version 8. We have a wealth more of querying predicates that do mirror a lot of the things and expectations over in SQL land. But also, like, we too have built a unique set of things that have made us a significantly more powerful database than the implementation strategies of 10 years ago. And then moreover, those implementation strategies were using basically a different paradigm. Right now, we're leveraging the unique power of the MongoDB aggregation pipeline. I'm not sure if folks are familiar, but just to walk through the MongoDB aggregation pipeline, it's not necessarily new, but it's MongoDB's sort of premier service in creating very, very intuitive and complex queries that can really stand production level work. And so how it works is you've heard me say the term predicate, right? So they're essentially these aggregation operators in this aggregation pipeline. And I want you to imagine like an assembly line of instruction, or like an assembly line, a traditional assembly line, right? And so the MongoDB aggregation pipeline works kind of like a traditional assembly line where each predicate is its own isolated augmentation onto the collection or the database that you're working against. And so you can quite literally intuit what's going to happen next because it's procedural, right? So if I were like using that starts with Z example, right? I know, let's say I want to find something super complex, like I want to find every movie that made over $2 billion in the last 12 years, right? You could spend a bunch of time trying to think about how do I do this in a very increasingly nested structure, or you could say, first, let me match on every movie, right? I want to group every movie by all of its total sales. Great. That's one step. Now that I've grouped every movie by each one of its total sales, I want to now do a greater than operation on 2 billion. Like, based on this, are they greater than 2 billion? Great. Now I've found all the ones greater than 2 billion. And now let's say I want to do something like rank them. Third procedural step, all of these isolated buckets that can be swapped around, interchanged, and tested in real time.
And that kind of fits with how when you're using a Django query set, you add a filter call and it, under the hood, it's doing an add queue where it adds a queue object. That's exactly the same kind of predicate with the
and
lookup.
So that's why I've been championing the point that Django isn't actually a SQL framework.
Oh, good. I love that. I love that. Brilliant.
That sounds like a conference talk for DjangoCon US. Oh. It's in September in Chicago.
Yeah. And the team will be at DjangoCon US, and we will actually also be giving a talk at DjangoCon EU. So stay tuned.
Okay.
Yeah. Which actually jumps into my third point about why this is different. I hate to kind of, to put it out there so plainly, but in the past solutions, MongoDB may have been a passive member, or we may have, helped influence the solution. But in today's iteration, in today's version, MongoDB has put their full force behind it. We've got dedicated engineers working on it as well. We've enlisted the consulting power of Tim Graham, a former Django fellow. So all of our decisions are couched in both Django specialization and MongoDB specialization. So there will be times where we truly, like, as a team, come together, butt heads, and have a real discussion about, like, okay, in this in part of the implementation, are we more Django here, or are we more MongoDB, or can we do both, right? And because we're now taking it from deeply specialized angles, we're able to say more concretely whether or not this is a decision that will stand the test of time, because we know we've got somebody here, two people, in fact, that can speak very, very acutely to what a typical Django developer looks for. And then we got employees who, deal with MongoDB every day. And so I think even in that relationship, we've formed something richer, and we folded it into our quarterly plans, our yearly plans. It is something that we're committed to continually iterating on.
Well, that's super important. I think the trouble with third-party backends historically has been, well, who's maintaining them? Who's developing them? Where's the engineering time to make sure they keep up with the changes in the ORM as Django evolves? And for Mongo to allocate that engineering time to it, is like, okay, that gives us some degree of confidence that it will continue to evolve compared to, say, other backends from companies that we won't bother naming in this circumstance.
Can I ask about so now there's support for the three big web frameworks, right? So there's already support for Flask and FastAPI and now Django. That's mm-hmm. correct, right?
Yes.
How much overlap is there? Because you're going, there's the Python space and then the web space. Can you reuse the Python stuff at all? Or are they completely different, the drivers for each of the three?
So they all use the same PyMongo driver. They all leverage that same core driver. So in terms of that, there's definitely overlap because we can use it. But in terms of how we view or we've treated each one, I would say that from my experience, like the Flask and the Fast API, they're sort of closer in wheelhouse based on their implementation. Flask being sort of like the least opinionated, as we know, like, hey, you just want to start something up, here you go, right? fast API, having a bit of an opinion. Specifically, the Sebastian's template generator is a little more opinionated because it helps you scaffold things. But in terms of like letting you kind of pick and choose your own adventure, Fast API still allows that leverage. Django, very, very on the other end.
The other two don't have the ORM, right? They don't have that, that model layer.
But they have SQL. Yeah, I guess that would be like a question, like, you know, so SQL Alchemy. I mean, okay, they don't have their own thing, but I mean, Flask, certainly you use SQL Alchemy in most of the cases I'm familiar with. Or disagree with me, please, if that's not the case.
Oh, no. You're right. I'd say that the thing is, like, the usage of the ORMs are not as tightly coupled, right? Like, so, and because they're not as tightly coupled, it's just, like, for us, our decision is, I think it's just better to make it easy to use or leverage our, like, our driver directly. Versus in Django, that's kind of antithetical to the experience, right?
Yeah, no, historically, that's it. You'd be like, you've got your Django view, and then all of a sudden you're bringing in, you know, the library for whichever NoSQL database you're using. And it's like, well, hang on, this just doesn't feel like Django. And
exactly.
The whole point with integrating the ORM is it will just feel like Django still.
And I'll say it, that's where we understood the thesis was different, right? Like when you go to Django, you go to Django because you're not just there for something that allows you to spin up a website. You're there because I want to have a solid authentication system. I want a solid administrator management. I want solid session management. I want to be able to know that when I build a form, it's all automatically like being able to like take the information and then write it to the database in such a way that I'm not thinking about this like 24/7. In the prior solutions, there's still going to be a somewhat non-trivial amount. And that's not to their detriment. It's just
you're building it yourself, yeah, right? So right. It's going to be
it's
more.
It's just you're building it yourself. And we understood that in Django, if we're and making users build it themselves, then we're kind of going against like what Django says on its website.
So I have to ask, are there corners yet that you aren't happy with, that aren't finished, that you...
Oh, absolutely. If there's one thing I stand by, it's like this, like one, you know, we're in beta, but two, even after we go for our general availability release later this year, there's still going to be more work to be done, because at the end of the day, fundamentally, SQL and NoSQL, there's a reason it's called NoSQL. but to answer the question in the present, right, there are a dirge of MongoDB specific things that we are aching to get in. We're just trying to get it in the right way. So one example is in a traditional like SQL structure, you're looking at the usage of foreign keys. That's second nature, right? For us, we also support that ability. Like it's like, if you want to use your foreign keys, go ahead. But we understand that what makes MongoDB performant is moving away from that paradigm and using what we call embedded documents. In this library, they're known as embedded models, and they're viewed as embedded model fields. The power of MongoDB is that you can have a document with tons, hundreds, thousands of subdocuments in them, and then query against that. Because this is not something that's really been done in SQL, like I know there's HStore, there's sort of like sub-objects and things like that, but to the degree in which they're done in MongoDB, it's a little bit different. And so we've been working on ways to get this nested embedded model structure to be airtight, but also work very intuitively in the Django ecosystem. And so that's one area that we're actually barreling down right now. And we are like absolutely set on making sure that that is a fluid experience for folks. There are other things that, you know, we've run into corner case situations on. Usually if it's like just an issue around like SQL, then we ignore it. Like, well, I can't support these SQL functions. It's okay. But yeah, I'd say like a lot of the like we're running into things where we want to improve more, iterate, and introduce more MongoDB specific aspects. And I'd say that the like as we are personally going through making sure those work, we're also hoping that during this like beta phase, people tell us what isn't working or what they find to be weird, so we can immediately kind of capture those. Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Buttondown. That's buttondown.com, email software for developers like you. There are hundreds of email marketing software services out there, and they all pretty much offer the same thing. Collect and clean addresses, send out broadcasts or drip campaigns, get analytics so you can see what's resonating and what's not. Buttondown is designed to hook into the tools that you already care about. Everything from static site generators like Jekyll or Hugo to payment platforms like Stripe and Memberful. You can hook your site up to Buttondown with just a form element or a simple REST call. Write emails in Markdown and then get on with the actual work you're supposed to do. New customers can save 50% off their first year with Buttondown using the coupon code Django. And if you email support, they'll white glove migrate your existing subscribers and archives for free.
I saw this in the docs. I know async is, you know, a new frontier in Django, and I believe there isn't really Mongo support for that yet. Is that correct?
Yeah, there isn't Mongo support for that yet, but that is also an area that we want to introduce. We're also in our driver. We are also currently like improving like our asynchronous functionality support. So simultaneously with this, you'd see like an improved and richer version of asynchronous functionality, both by the baseline driver and also and we hope it complements Django as well. So we aim to have support. But for now, we figured it's just it's great to get that sort of bread and butter synchronous ability good to go. And as we push towards general availability, where more production use cases are leveraged, we want to be confident about saying, hey, we can also support your asynchronous case as well.
Okay. What was the hardest thing? You know, what was the moment in the project where you're like, oh, this isn't going to work?
Oh, yeah. So I think there's actually so many of these. I'll say, let me start off with what was easy. So what was actually shockingly easy to me was doing that initial replacement of like the MQL with SQL. That was actually shockingly easy. It was like, hey, here are the lookups. Here are the functions that the lookups will generate instead, right? It's quite literally a dictionary. Yeah. Where things got very interesting was when we had to start supporting things like annotations, or supporting our version of grouping, supporting group by in a MongoDB specific way, because like I said, we have a very procedural, procedurally generated SQL statement. I mean, MQL. It's an array of Python objects, if you want to think about it like that. And so one big thing is, in order for it to be self-referential about something that happened, let's say at step number 4, we need to capture metadata now. And then make sure that the metadata hasn't been mutated too much from step number 4 to step number 7 to ensure that the output is the same. And then another challenging one was MongoDB at the database layer handles nulls differently, right? So where Django would expect a null value, MongoDB is like, bro, we don't have a value at all. Like, we're not beholden to that. And so we would run into those almost quirks where it's like, okay, what do we need to do? How do we get smart about this? And how do we like really get things working? And then I think honestly, personal to me, one of the biggest necessary headaches, tests.
Tests. Ah, I was going to ask you about tests. Yeah, go.
So the first thing we've run into with the tests was, well, when the Django test suite runs its tests, clearly it's going to check against an auto field, an integer as its key. MongoDB does not use, like, traditionally, our primary key is an object ID, which is a, let me not get the bit and code, but basically it's like a specialized unique ID constructed in BSON. And whenever you submit, let's say, in this case, let's say you submit a document or a row, we don't supply that object ID usually for creation because when it reads like because we'll automatically generate an object ID and then submit it. And so what would happen in the test is the test case would expect, hey, this object that's coming back should have the ID of 1, 2, 3, or 4. And instead we'd have the object ID of 1A3735, crap, right? And so we had to basically fork the test to then override the natural test structure to allow us to just use object IDs or to fake use a different ID implementation. And the thing is, this sounds, again, hand-wavy and easy solution, but when there's hundreds, thousands of tests that run into this like minute issue, and you're trying to debug whether or not, hey, is it this thing that we've identified or something completely different? Or is it something we can even solve at all? It is something that you have to quite literally look at each test and deduce yourself. And it's like, I think it was, for me, it felt like the most daunting thing, because I to look at such a tenured databases or tenured frameworks test cases and say like, okay, we're going to try for this, right? And then to kind of present that to the team and then have, you know, Tim, who extremely well informed, is like, actually, no, not this one. And like, it's just so, it felt like, is this ever actually going to end? and thankfully it did. Like we managed to triage every single test, figure out the ones that don't necessarily matter for the sake of what we're doing, and the ones that we absolutely want to make sure matter based on this fork. And I think it comes out to the number of like 82 test suites with, well into the hundreds in terms of tests. But once everything went green, that was honestly like Christmas Day for me.
Yeah, I can imagine. I was like, I can imagine.
It objectively works.
And yeah. How are you keeping your test suite up to date with changes that come into sort of Django's main branch or development branch?
So right now there are two sort of things. One, we keep because Django's got its branching is like 5.1, 5.2, 4.2. We've got our individual branches, like forked branches, that will keep up with whatever changes may manifest per those specific branches. And clearly, like for main, like we also do our best to test against that. And so in terms of like how we keep that up is, hey, we check with 5.1. Are we in alignment with the 5.1 tests? Are we aligned with 5.1 changes? Great. Are we aligned with 5.0 changes, 5.0 tests? Great. With main, we see something's been added. Is this something that we want to get ahead of now? Yes. And so we have even like testing coming in later bits just to continually make sure that we are up to date. And then we, again, triage the issue to understand whether or not it's something we need to tackle now, if it's something we can just skip, and things of that nature.
I think that's the key, is that historically, backends have sort of matched the Django test suite, but maybe at a point of time. Mm-hmm. But then they just haven't been able to keep the engineering going to keep it up to date. Because Django keeps moving, right?
It does. You know,
all the time. And so that it's that bit. It's the kind of like, yeah, we need to keep bringing in the new tests, keep bringing in the new features as they're developed, you know, to the extent that it matches the data model.
Yeah.
Super.
Yeah.
I just got realizing, one more
technique.
You can continue. I was just saying, I just realized this is now the third episode we've done related to MongoDB, because we've had two developer advocates before. We had Mark Smith, who's based in the UK 2 years ago, I think. And then we had Aaron Bassett before that, who was on the Django I don't think is at MongoDB anymore, but he was on the Django board with me. So this is a rich vein of discussion.
But go ahead, Karatha. When we had Aaron on, like this idea of a native integration with the Django ORM was just, it was just no more than a twinkle in somebody's eye.
Yeah, I mean, that was almost 5 years ago. Yeah, I think there was a third. Yeah. It wasn't anything official. I don't think.
Okay.
Anyway. Sorry. Go ahead.
So I've got one more question. Migrations. How does that look? Because MongoDB schemaless, right? NoSQL schemaless. Like, how do migrations fit in? Do I just create them as usual, run them as usual, and all is magic?
Yes. So one, yes. I'll say this.
Next question, Carlton.
yeah. Obviously. Come on. Why, you brought me all this way to say that.
No, it's a great question. So again, MongoDB schemaless. I will say that, you know, having a lack of a schema, one, does not mean that you don't need to have a schema. As a person who's done a lot of database work, please always, as you're codifying your work, establish a schema, because you don't want developers or anybody kind of saying, oh, there's no schema, I'm just going to throw in a random key every now and again. And then
later down the road. Yeah.
I've got bad memories from about 2010 of that exact scenario.
The way the migrations is working right now is you quite literally call it, it'll create your database, it'll create your indexes that you specify. Right now, we've chosen not to enforce a schema. Again, we're in beta because most people understand the rapid prototyping and development of MongoDB and enforcing the schema at this stage just feels like, we may be jumping the gun, right? But the beauty of, we still recognize the beauty that comes from having something like migrations. And one, now that it's codified, what your schema is, regardless of whether or not it is or isn't enforced at the database layer. And then two, when you make alterations, migrations will also capture those alterations and make them as necessary, supplying, and even go so far as, you know, supplying whatever the necessary default is when it comes down to you. So like in terms of migrations, it works, TM. It works. It's just not enforcing schema, but that does not remove it the level of importance we understood and found about it.
And so that's something I could do at a later date, or not yes, I, but yes. One could do at a later date.
Oops. And even now we do have basically ways, or like we like to call them a bit of escape hatches or functionalities, where if there is something super unique to MongoDB that at its current iteration we haven't exposed through Django's feature set, we've documented a way to just grab the underlying driver or the underlying client connection that's used, and then you can configure the client information under the like just right there directly. And then go right back to your Django development, and it'll propagate because you're using the same client configuration of the connection.
Yeah, and like even in normal Django land, you occasionally grab the connection and grab the cursor.
Exactly. And so if somebody does want to enforce schema, we've documented how you can go do that. Grab the client, use the $JSON schema validation, and you're good to go.
Wowza. But well, you've answered all my questions. I'm like, I'm just itching to go and play now.
Thank you,
Will.
Well, I mean, what should we be asking you? You know, I mean, I know there's a whole lot of press that's just come out. Like, we've touched upon a number of things. Are there anything we haven't mentioned that specifically you're excited about or think people should know about with this new driver?
Yeah, that in and of itself is a great question. So first, I think one of the biggest things that I'm really proud we put out in this iteration is it's called a raw aggregate. Now, I understand there's literally a predicate for aggregation in SQL. This is raw aggregate is hearkening towards MongoDB's aggregation pipeline. Right? So if you remember the .raw in Django, which allows you to pass a string that has a structured SQL in it, we've made our own analog, but it's not just a string. It's a list of, like I said, Python dictionaries, which in this list of Python dictionaries, you can quite literally construct a normal MongoDB aggregation pipeline. And what it'll do is similar to how the .raw works. It will give you a Django query set object. Like, you will get a query set object back from a query you've done, basically executing raw MQL. And I think that's a really powerful thing, because no other implementation has done that. No other implementation has really looked through the API for all of its richness and said, hey, this is something that that would be really powerful to use, especially at this stage. And the reason even more so why it's powerful is MongoDB's got things that come natively, right? We've got vector search. We've got our full text search capabilities. We've got our geospatial querying, and we've got even more interesting like search predicates, like graph lookup and things like that. And by using that raw aggregate framework, you're immediately able to interface with that and then still get Django like you'd expect and use it very seamlessly or very well in the flow. Like, in the future, we definitely want to improve upon this and, like, you know, have potentially, like, some, you know, more integrated solution of search and geospatial. But for now, it's a great way if you want to, like, do more advanced things that you know or you understand MongoDB can do really well. You can.
Yeah, I think that's a nice selling point. It's like one of the complaints about an ORM, a multi-database ORM in particular, is that it's kind of ends up being the lowest common denominator is the criticism, is because you don't get the advanced features of database A, and you don't get the advanced features of database B, and you don't get the advanced features of database C. So to be able to break or to have made space to say, you know what, if you're using Mongo, you can still reach out for those advanced features. That's a nice addition. Of course you can always get the driver, you can always do the things, but if it's nicely exposed in the API, that makes it all the more enticing, right?
And then second thing, I think one big question I remember getting asked at DjangoCon US last year was, hey, you guys do joins? And I want to say, you know, very succinctly, yes, we do. We actually have introduced this operator called dollar lookup. It's been something that's existed in MongoDB for some time. And without getting too in the weeds, that is our join. You can execute a left join, a right join, an outer join through the dollar lookup operation. Now, my big sort of cautioning point is, like I'd said earlier, we are not, that third normal form and leveraging that is not what makes MongoDB. So for now, please go ahead, use it. Create a foreign key, create a one to many field, a many to many field. In the coming months, in the coming weeks, like, look forward to seeing, the things like nested embedded models. And we will also provide documentation on how to transform that sort of traditional foreign key usage to a representation in MongoDB that leverages that more traditional document structure that we as a MongoDB know and love.
Yeah, right. Ultimately, the SQL model and the document model and document models aren't the same, right? So
yeah, and the third piece that I want to touch on is the third-party integrations, right? Third-party libraries. Yes. So, like I said, like we've chatted about, we're trying to make this work with Django, period. And so part of Django's power is all of the libraries that have come out. Things like Wagtail, Django AllAuth, Django REST Framework, Django Filter. We are currently doing the work to make sure those are just as seamless as we're making this ORM, like as we're making this framework integration to be. So that is on our work, and that is on our roadmap for the months to come. And if there is a third party library, a third party framework with Django that as a developer, you find important. We are all ears. We are listening. We are open. And we're like, and we'd love to know sooner rather than later what those are, so we can evaluate whether or not we can support them, because we'd most likely want to. And so, like, to conclude those three points, it's like, we're still growing, we're still evolving, we're still learning. I say this as the sort of lead engineer on this project. We are here for real. Like, we are fully invested, and with open ears, and we are a team of enthusiastic Django developers writing MongoDB, like code for MongoDB. So don't ever think you can't just, you know, check out the MongoDB community forum or post something in the Django forums, or even post something on Reddit and at MongoDB and let us know. We've got folks just looking, waiting, checking, because we want to do this right and we want to do this permanently. And that's kind of that's kind of like the recurring motif for us.
Yeah, no, and I really support that, because so many companies, they put a Django library out and they don't really do the job, and they don't support it in the medium term, and people get burnt by that. So the you know, that you're here saying that Mongo's here for the medium and long term, that's, you know, that's a really nice thing to hear.
Yeah, I mean, I see you also on the, I have the repo up, you know, you were just yesterday, you know, putting in commits. So I think this is really great. I mean, selfishly for Django, right, to have a powerful NoSQL story, because people have used Mongo over the years, but it's been, you know, there hasn't been that all-in support the way there is now. And so both, obviously, hopefully Django's clearly makes sense for Mongo, but I mean, just for Django to be broader in terms of Python web all-encompassing, yeah, it opens up so many areas that, you know, people... One of the big reasons why people use Flask is because they want NoSQL and they feel like they can't do it in Django. Like, that, I would say that's a top three, top five reason I hear. So that would be pretty powerful for Django if that shifts a bit.
And I can even add an anecdote myself. So yeah. I've been doing a project, like I said, the project that I started off on MongoDB some time back with my friends. And we were like, okay, we've been using Flask. This is not like a production level site. Let's actually, you know, get some authentication and paneling that we can stand behind. First thing we look towards is like, okay, what does it take to move to Django? And we ultimately had to pass, because the upkeep for maintaining both MongoDB and Django at that time was not something that we, as sort of ragtag group of developers, felt like handling at the time. And so this really feels like a full circle moment for me, as well as those same friends who I am currently messaging, like, guys, look what I've done. Hey, hey.
Yeah, it's happening. It's happening.
Right? And so it's really a moment where we're rejoicing, like, wow, like, I wish we had this, you know, 8 years ago.
Yeah. No, I mean, again, thinking about what I just said, I think it's definitely a top three reason why people choose Flask. Like, so why would someone choose Flask? They would say it's more lightweight and you can get started on it faster. There's been a bunch of work, not the least Carlton's given talks. There's these Nano Django repos and stuff showing that, you know, hey, like, you don't have to use all the batteries of Django right off the bat. NoSQL support is a huge one.
Yeah.
I can't think what the third is, but, you know, to leverage what we have in this community of the third-party packages, of the forum, of all these things, like, I can't speak as much to Fast API, but Flask, the whole point is it's a tool in part that you use with other things, whereas Django is an all-in-one code and community in a way that, you know, Flask is not. And that's not to take anything away from Flask. It's just they're different things, different tools for different jobs.
And yeah, I definitely resonate with the Django. There's also like when you're implementing something for Django, you're implementing something for, like, clearly a community. It was very, like, my first time at a DjangoCon, and I was, you know, grinning ear to ear, just chatting with everyone.
Yeah.
And I really, really look forward to going to another, like, and sort of being engaged, because I understand it's not just code that's being written. It's like, the impact to the communities, the workflows and how it's, you know, influencing so many things and how even engaging with the community can help, you know, inform decisions itself. So I will say like it's a full package deal, and that's what I do really love about Django.
Super. Well, I look forward to your colleagues at DjangoCon Europe. And I just want to mention, you said something that I've done a couple times and have been corrected by Europeans, which I've referred to it as DjangoCon EU. You know, there is a difference, apparently, between the EU and Europe, especially when we were in Scotland 2 years ago. So I'm attuned to that because I was corrected on it several times. So I'll just mention that to you. It's DjangoCon Europe, not EU.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
These things are important in these political
as a fellow
days.
American, you know, it's like, you know,
whatever over there,
less important, but yeah, you know,
yeah. No, thank you. That is a very good clarification. Great.
So Jim, I've got one question we often ask people, but I think it'd be really nice to ask you this question because you've come to Django as somebody implementing and you know, NoSQL backend for the ORM. If you had a magic wand and you could fix one thing in Django, what would it be? If Django could make one change, what would your magic wand fix be?
Magic
or
wand.
New feature or change? Yeah.
Let's see. A magic wand feature fixing for Django. I would say that I would really like.
It's a tough one. Sorry if we sprung it on you. I mean, it's something we've gotten in the habit recently of asking guests because, yeah, it's a tough one.
And it may be now you've worked around all the bad things. You don't want to change anything because you've already worked around them.
Right. I mean, for example, just to get your brain going, I think Carlton and I have talked about one thing would be to have, when you start a new Django project, some way that you can have, like in brackets, local or production to kind of get over that cliff of, you know, because the default's to local and then to get to production is just a lot of steps for anyone. And I think that's off-putting to people. So that seems like something that could be done.
Yeah, actually, that's a great point. I'd say in that same vein, yeah, I think... when we were like creating our quick start for the Django project, I was like, how quick can I make this quick start? and I feel like, there were several things that if there was a way to even, basically go from project to first app in one command line argument, that would be beautiful. Cause right now, like you start app, you then go in, you edit the app, and then you also have to edit the main line to link URLs. So there we go. I found my answer.
Yeah.
URL linking. No, good behavior.
Good. Yeah. So there is a DEP in progress, a Django enhancement process in process to simplify the default project and the tutorial for that. So to have a kind of single file thing. So it's to start project, and then that's already an app that you would then carry on.
Great.
And create your view and things.
I mean, and to give a shout out, so Eric Mathis, who's the author of a Python Crash Course, he has a package he's been working on for a while, a repo called Django Simple Deploy.
Oh, wow.
That integrates with a number of backends, I think Heroku, Fly, Platform SH, to try to have like one place to handle all this. He's been working on that a lot over the last couple of years. There's also, I maintain a package called Lithium now that was Django X. It doesn't have full deployment yet, but it has like just gets you started. Like, you know, gives you Django all auth, gives you crispy forms, gives you a couple things so you can just get going. I would check that out. It's basically a simpler cookie cutter Django, whatever that is called. So that's been around for a while. But if there's a, you know, eventually if there's a DEP and there's an officially supported way to do it, I think it would get over that idea in people's head that Django is like this beast that can't be tamed, when, you know, it's customizable, but we can have an easier path if you want to just get going with something. Yes, Carlton.
I think as well, part of the DEP is the idea to kind of promote the idea of project templates to make them a bit more of a thing. Yeah. So that, you know, so if you're working for MongoDB, you can create a MongoDB starter project that they just go start project and then with the link, and then it's kind of already got the right bits set up. And that would, I think that's possible now, but it's kind of hidden and it's a bit arcane. Whereas if we can promote that a bit more, maybe it become normalized that each shop would have their own start project.
Yeah.
And I mean, just as a last thought, it's great to see a database backend getting involved with Django. I mean, if you look at who's sponsored things historically, like conferences and other things, there's been platform providers, so Platform SH, some other ones over the years, and then consultancies. There isn't really a big next place. So Mongo seems very well placed just for that to slip in, and also because, yeah, like if we can just do away with the NoSQL doesn't work on Django story, that's such a huge win.
And to have, you know, headline, another backend for the Django RM, you know, that's a major.
And then can we finally kick out Oracle? Like, let's just swap it.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. You can put that to the board, Will.
I know. Now that I'm not on the board, I was actually asking some other stuff. I can just be like, wouldn't it be nice if someone XYZ. All right. So we're going to link to the post, to the repo. If people do have suggestions around third-party packages and other things, what's the easiest way to reach out? You mentioned you're available on the forum, on Reddit. Should they do an issue on the project, or what would be the preferred way?
So I'd say the preferred way right now is we've got if you check the repo, we've got a section called Issues and Help. The fastest response we'll give is if you provide feedback on the MongoDB community forums or filing an issue or Jira ticket, because that'll get right to developers almost immediately. If the Django forum is the next sort of comfortable one, I'd say go there. But yeah, the MongoDB community forum and our issues and help section, providing a Jira ticket.
Okay.
Well, thank you. This was a pretty amazing chat, I think. So and timely. I'm sorry that it's going to wait 2 weeks to come out, but that's okay. We'll, you know, the other things will come out on the Django News newsletter and other things, and then people will have this to look forward to have more explanation.
And thank you for having me. I feel so like honored and humbled to be here.
No, it's awesome having you on. Really, really, really great chat.
So to wrap it up, djangochat.com, links to everything in the show notes, and we'll see everyone next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This episode was brought to you by Button Down, the easiest way to start, send, and grow your email newsletter.